Welcome to the Empowering Agency Workers, the podcast for all temporary workers. If you're unsure of your rights, unsure how to find work, or just plain unsure, we're here to help. It's all too easy to be exploited, so your expert host, Julia Kermode, will empower you to succeed.
Welcome to today's podcast episode. Today we are talking about umbrellas, and the reason why we're talking about umbrellas is that there's been a new report out that pulls together all the various strands of umbrellas and how they operate and the impact on workers, etc. And I'm delighted to have with me the author of that report, who's pulled it together from all sorts of different sources, Meredith McCammon. So really warm welcome, Meredith. Thank you for joining us. And just for our listeners, Meredith is Technical Officer at the Low Income Tax Reform Group, which is part of the Chartered Institute of Taxation. And Meredith's background is as a chartered tax advisor, so she knows, well, I think tax legislation is enormous, so I wouldn't like to say she knows everything, but she knows a huge amount about it, and certainly all about this subject of umbrellas. So welcome. Anything to add, Meredith?
No, thank you. Very nice to be here. And just a small but very important clarification, we're the Low Incomes Tax Reform Group, not the Low Income Tax Reform Group, which people... Sometimes when you say low income tax reform group, people think we're kind of campaigning for low income tax.
That's a very good point. That's a very good point. I will make sure I get it correct every single time from here on in. I apologise. Must crop up all the time. So to kick off, I think our listeners will have some idea of what umbrella companies are, because our listeners are workers that work through recruitment agencies. But just for the benefit of anybody, what is an umbrella company and why do they exist?
Well, that's a good question. And I think, you know, the simplest way that I can describe umbrella companies are that they're businesses set up solely to kind of employ people. And that's... you know, quite a strange concept to get your head around, because normally businesses are set up to kind of trade or have some kind of substantive business kind of undertaking. But, you know, umbrella companies are there solely really to kind of employ people and, you know, pay people.
Yeah, and it is a really confusing concept. So I think I've been involved in this sector for about 7 years now. And I remember when I first came, I just couldn't get my head around it. Like a business that's set up to employ people at scale, it just didn't make sense. But then as you delve more into the world of recruitment agencies, it certainly makes sense from their perspective, because it takes a lot of the responsibility away from recruitment agencies and also the clients that are using temporary workers. Because employment law is very, very onerous for businesses, so I guess umbrellas fill that niche and they take that on for them. And we will definitely get into it in more detail, actually. But given that umbrellas are a bit of a strange concept, I guess that might be why this report has come about. I mean, why did it come about? How come you were commissioned to do the report?
So we kind of wrote a big report, really, back in 2014, looking at the whole picture, trying to kind of shine a light on what was going on. But actually, it piqued our interest in umbrella companies. And, you know, it became very clear to us as part of writing that report that actually... you know, it's not just a simple case of saying umbrella companies are bad and they should be kind of removed from the landscape. It's much more complex than that, and it's much more nuanced, really. Mm. And I suppose, you know, since writing that report, we've kind of just been keeping like a bit of a watching brief on the area and just kind of monitoring developments, just to see kind of, you know, what was going on, really, particularly for those lower paid agency workers that I mentioned we were kind of most concerned with. So, Then the TUC commissioned this report, and we thought it was just an excellent kind of opportunity, really, to kind of take a snapshot of, you know, how things had developed since that 2014 report and where things were today and what the kind of state of the landscape was today, really.
You have a very handy infographic, which has some facts and figures about the sector. And can you talk us through a little bit about how you pulled together those figures, other than the challenge of just looking everywhere and common sense?
Well, I think some of the most interesting figures that we... Well, let me first start by saying, I think the whole point of us kind of pulling together a range of information was that we wanted to kind of create a picture, you know, and we wanted to give people enough of a picture that they were able to stand back and look at that picture and decide for themselves what that picture meant, you know.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
As well as all those sources that I spoke about, talking to experts and looking at website queries and looking at umbrella company offerings and so on, we also thought it was quite important to kind of, you know, really get to the nitty gritty and do some delving around in company's house. But it was interesting because of what I found, actually. And what I found was that, well, certainly the umbrella companies that we looked at, and, you know, I do recognise that it's just a snapshot and that 25 out of however big the marketplace is, you know, isn't wholly representative. But actually the ones that we looked at, we found really weren't making kind of that much money. And I found that quite interesting because, you know, over the years, I've heard umbrellas called all sorts of things. I've heard them called, you know, being called kind of unethical and immoral. And I've heard them being called kind of, you know, even like loan sharks, you know, they're no better than loan sharks.
Yeah.
And I suppose all of that kind of, you know, taken together meant that when I went into the limited company accounts, I was actually expecting to see umbrella companies kind of really having been reeling it in. And that really
wasn't living a lavish lifestyle.
No, that's right. And that really wasn't the case at all. You know, what we found was that actually the vast, you know, majority of money that comes into an umbrella company actually gets paid out in worker salaries and in employment costs. And actually, once you've stripped everything off the turnover, you know, some of the operating profits we were coming across were actually, you know, quite modest.
And I think one of the figures is a gross profit margin of 2.66%, I think was the average. What does that actually mean? I mean, I think I know what it means, but I'm not going to attempt to explain it because I've got you here. So why would I? But what does that mean then for our listeners in really simple terms?
I think there's a general kind of misunderstanding around the difference between kind of turnover and the difference between profit. Okay.
Yeah.
And I think that 2.66% figure is really interesting because it's from one of the biggest umbrella companies out there. In fact, I think the biggest. And, you know, when you look at the headline turnover rate, you know, of, I think it's something like 287 million. I mean, it's a staggering amount of money. And if you kind of didn't really understand what that figure was, you would kind of perhaps think that umbrella companies were really reeling it in. But actually, that 287 million is the total amount of money that umbrella companies are paid by the agencies, you know, that they kind of take workers on from. And, you know, from that 287 million, just to use this as an example, because I think it's a really good one. Actually, in those company accounts, 280 million of that 287 million was paid out. So that, you know, it was paid out as salary, the worker's salary. It was paid out in employers' NICs. It was paid out in pension contributions. What was left was 7 million, and that's the gross profit of the umbrella company. But from that 7 million, the umbrella company then will need to fund its overheads. You know, it might have kind of expenses, rental expenses. It will have kind of staff costs, you know, kind of head office staff costs. There's all sorts of stuff that then comes off that 7 million. And actually, the bottom line for that particular umbrella company was that their operating profit was 1 million. And the interesting thing about that is that actually their accounts were so clear and were so kind of transparent and detailed that they actually also gave details of how many workers they had on their books in that year. And there were 6,500 workers that they had on their books that year.
Wow. Yeah.
And if you consider the 1 million profit over the 6,500 workers on their books, actually it kind of works out about 150 quid a worker. So, you know, they've done all that employer kind of function. They've done all the payroll business, all the HR stuff, you know, done everything for 150 quid per worker. And wow. I think when you break things down like that, you know, it kind of really, I think it gives a much clearer picture as to, you know, what the business model is and how umbrella companies function, really. Much clearer picture than the 287 kind of turnover.
Exactly. Yeah, I think people don't quite join the dots when you were looking at the accounts on Companies House and you saw that big figure of income. Of course, you've got to remember that the vast majority of that is the wages for the temporary workers that they're employing going straight back out.
That's
again.
Right.
So it's a very good point and one really worth kind of making. So I was glad to talk that through with you.
I mean, I suppose that particular umbrella is a particularly good example, you know, and I think I was kind of pleasantly surprised as to how clear and how transparent it was and how easy it was to reconcile. I have to say that there were a number of the umbrella companies that we looked at where we weren't able to go into their Companies House records and look around because they didn't provide a Companies House number on their website. Now that's a kind of, I mean, it's a small but important kind of point, really, that actually it's a legal requirement to, if you're a limited company, to put your limited company number on your website.
Yeah.
And, you know, given there's so much kind of talk in the sector around being transparent and around kind of having nothing to hide, it does seem to me to be a slight kind of own goal that these however many umbrella companies out of the 25 didn't actually have their limited company number on their website, because that would have been, you know, a key way, wouldn't it, of them kind of displaying that they're wholly transparent and they have nothing to hide.
Yeah, it's a silly little detail, isn't it? But I guess one that can easily be missed by your marketing department, say. But even so, I mean, come on.
I know. It's a basic thing. And it just seems to me it would have just been one of those small, really kind of quick wins for umbrella companies.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Talking of transparency, the most often query that I've received over the years in relation to umbrellas is about pay rates. And so this is from workers kind of getting in touch and they're not sure how their pay is calculated by umbrellas. Now, I guess you will have looked at this and come across this, well, through your work at Litrig and also in terms of pulling this report together. What's your experience? What are your findings in relation to that? And also, if we can try and explain how umbrellas work pay rate-wise. Tell us.
I mean, I think you're right. I think the pay rate transparency thing is probably one of the, you know, the biggest considerations for the sector. I mean, I think we're tax people, you know, at Litrig, and we're kind of nerdy tax people. And we were kind of half expecting to, you know, come up with all this travel expense business, you know, in terms of what was going on. And if there were any problems, we were kind of half expecting it to be all about travel expenses, because, you know, that's just the way our brains kind of wired. And actually, that's, you know, interestingly, it's not really travel expenses that were keeping me up at night. You know, it was more this pay rate transparency problem. And I think the problem is that the problems that we see are kind of twofold. The first one is that agency workers take up a position through an umbrella company and are kind of led to believe that the amount that the agency is going to pay over to the umbrella company is actually the amount that the worker themselves are going to take home. You know, that's their pay amount. And of course, then they're wholly disappointed when they get their first payslip and they realise that the amount that was paid over to the umbrella company wasn't actually designated or earmarked for them solely. You know, it was actually intended to be partially theirs, but partially also the umbrella company's income in order to pay the employer costs and so on. So I think that that's an issue. There's you know, certainly a kind of piece of work around that could go on. But I think the kind of the more worrying thing that we come across is really where you know, the agency doesn't pay over any kind of uplifted amount to the umbrella company at all. The agency just merely hands over the amount of the workers' wages, essentially, to the umbrella company, which means that the umbrella company then only has that amount of money to do what it needs to do in terms of kind of paying all the employer costs. And it means that workers are left with a lower amount than they're expecting. And it does, I suppose, you know, mean that actually workers are footing their own employment costs.
Yes.
You know, the key thing, I suppose, is that in all of this, you know, and I know that there's been a great deal of work going on in order to try and kind of bring clarity to this, to the picture. But the key thing for workers to understand is that if they're passed to an umbrella company by an agency, that their rate should be uplifted, you know, in order to take into consideration the fact that the umbrella company will take on the employer role. It will have to pay employers nick. It will have to pay, you know, pay holiday pay. It will have to kind of pay auto enrolment pensions. And, you know, some figures that we've worked up show that actually that uplift needs to be as much as 25 to 30%. You know, so if you're, you're an agency worker and you're going to take a job at £10 an hour, actually, in order for you to get £10 an hour after everything's been run through the umbrella company, actually £13 an hour needs to be handed to the umbrella company. So, you know, there's it is quite a difficult concept. And, you know, I can see that there has been, you know, I can see why this has been such a knotty issue in the past, really. But
So it's probably, you know, worth reminding people that actually the money that the umbrella receives from the agency is it total for the whole cost of employing that individual. And legally, that umbrella has to pay employers' dash insurance. Most of them will have to pay the apprenticeship levy as well, because most of their payrolls will be big enough so that there's all these costs associated with it. And I think, you know, often agency workers aren't alive to that. And why would they be? They're expecting to be paid a certain amount. And definitely more could and should be done to be clearer about that. It's helpful to know that generally what you will be being paid from the umbrella is probably the hidden overhead costs. I think you said are about 20 to 30% more. It's a difficult one. So really, if you are going to be paid through an umbrella, one of the main things you will want from your agency is key information document. And that is a new legal change, I think came in last April, where agencies are required to provide that sort of information, and it needs to be illustrative in terms of what that individual will receive, deductions from their pay, etc. Now, it's also worth making the point that the money that's paid to the umbrella is not just their pay, it's their pay plus the on cost. So when people think that they are having employer slash insurance deducted from their rate, it's not. It's from the rate of pay that goes to the umbrella. And that's such a difficult issue. Yeah. It's such a difficult thing to be clear on, isn't it?
That's right. I mean, the law, you know, the law's really clear that workers should not ever fund their own employer's national insurance from their own wages. I mean, you know, it's crystal clear. What's not so clear is what happens where the agency doesn't pay the umbrella enough money to, you know, to make sure that the employer nick and everything is settled, so that indirectly the worker is still in the same position as if they were paying their own employer's nick.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, it seems to me that there's a whole, you know, that the whole matter really needs to be given a good airing. I don't know if a test case needs to be brought or something. It's an area that desperately needs clarity. But what I would say in the meantime is that, you know, clearly there's this issue is partially agency led, you know, in that the rates aren't being uplifted appropriately. But it does strike me that, you know, it's not doing umbrella companies, you know, it's not doing anybody any favours for umbrella companies just to kind of process workers without thinking about whether or not the rate is, you know, just acting as a kind of sausage factory and processing these workers and not really spending any time thinking, is this actually the proper rate? Should the agency have uplifted it properly? It's not really doing anyone any favours. And I think, You know, until there's proper clarity brought and until the kind of law has been tested and we all kind of understand what the situation is when the issue is between the agency and the umbrella and not the umbrella and the worker, I do think umbrellas could just do a little bit more to make sure that workers kind of aren't in the dark.
Yeah. And I know from experience that some umbrellas do invest quite a bit of time in trying to explain to workers how they are being paid and how it works. But of course, from the workers' perspective as well, they just want to... They perhaps aren't listening properly. I don't mean to be judgmental. I just mean in terms of when I'm looking at my mortgage or whatever, you've got all this stuff going on down the phone and you're just like, I just want the bottom line.
That's right.
And so you don't always kind of take on board what you're being told.
You're absolutely right. And actually, you know, this is one of the issues I've got with the KID document. I mean, I think overall it's quite a useful initiative, you know, and I do think it's something to be welcomed. But actually, I do have slight kind of reservations as to whether or not it's going to have the impact that everybody kind of hopes it's going to have. Because actually, in order for it to make a difference to workers' understanding and in order for it to make a difference in terms of bringing transparency to the piece, there's so many things that need to happen in order for it to do its job. There are so many pieces of the puzzle that need to fall into place. So, you know, the umbrella has to give the agency the correct information in order for the agency to then complete the KID properly. The agency then needs to do that and it needs to give the KID to the worker. The worker then needs to take the KID and they need to read it and they need to understand it. And then, you know, the last bit of the chain is that once they've done all those things, once all those pieces have been done, the worker still needs to then understand what that means for them and make a decision based on the information in that KID, which I'm not sure that they'll be able to do for the very reasons that you've said. I mean...
Yeah.
Unless they've got something to compare the bottom line with, how are they going to really know whether it's right or wrong? Or I don't know. I mean, I do think it's a useful initiative, but I do think it's slightly kind of narrow. And I just wonder whether more could have been done really to kind of bring a bit more context for agency workers working through umbrella companies.
Yeah, I think it would be disappointing if there wasn't more done in relation to the key information document, because there's huge opportunity there. And one of the flaws I personally think is that it only needs to be illustrative. So you could potentially just have one that's based on minimum wage. Well, that will mean stuff to people on that minimum wage, but it won't mean anything as depending on your earnings level. And there's just so much potential. It could really address the problems. Yeah. And I think there's more to be done.
Absolutely.
Completely agree.
It can't just be a standalone initiative. There needs to be kind of other stuff going on around the edges to kind of make it work, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, completely. One of the case studies in the report is actually an overseas worker who was coming over to the UK, I think to be a supply teacher, but I might be wrong on on that. But there was the confusion on the pay rates thing, exactly as we've just outlined. And this person, I don't think, realised their income was going to be quite a bit lower until they got here. and it's not funny. I don't know why I'm laughing. I massively apologise. I shouldn't have laughed at all because it's really not... It's just horrific.
I know what you mean. Yeah. It's so unnecessary. I mean, you know, if everybody was just working to the same rules, if everybody was just kind of if everybody was just clear that there are two rates, you know, if you're an agency worker and you're working through an umbrella, there are two rates that you need to be keeping in your mind at all times. There's the rate that's the rate that you would have got if you'd have worked through the agency, and then there's this different rate. And that's the rate that you get if you work through the umbrella company. And they're two rates and they mean two different things. And it's impossible to understand what one means against the other unless you've got both of them. So, you know.
Yeah.
There's a lot of kind of onus on umbrellas and agencies and so on to do the right thing. But I think also workers need to be kind of more curious and they need to kind of feel kind of empowered to be able to go back to agencies or umbrellas and say, listen, I've only got half of the picture here. I need the other half of the picture. And if they can, you know, if they can get that information, then they're in a much better position to be able to work out what to do for the best, I think.
So as an umbrella employee, And also as an agency worker, actually, you're entitled to accrue holiday. And this is one of the things I think workers new to this space don't always realise. So if you're a temp working through an umbrella, how do they tend to deal with holiday?
You're absolutely right that kind of agency workers are entitled to 28 days minimum holiday. And the same rules apply to umbrella, you know, agency workers that work through umbrella companies. It's slightly harder when you're an agency worker or an umbrella company worker to kind of work out how the 28 days kind of accrues when you're working, you know, on assignments and you haven't got kind of permanent kind of continuous employment. But I think the kind of industry standard is that for every hour you work, you accrue 12.07% of that hour as holiday entitlement.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you kind of build that up over however long the assignment is or whatever. And then you kind of have it paid out at whatever your average pay rate is.
Yes. Yeah.
And you know, as far as we could tell from looking at the kind of evidence that we found, that it does seem to be working. I mean, that does seem to be what's happening in the umbrella industry, certainly at the you know, at the umbrellas that we looked at. So I suppose that's really positive.
Yeah.
I do think there's a slightly kind of knotty issue in terms of whether or not people should have their holiday pay rolled up or whether it should be accrued. And I think that's probably what, you know, what most umbrella company workers are having to grapple with, really.
Yes. So let's try and explain the difference between rolled up and accrued. And actually at the start of all of this for holiday pay, one of the reasons why they look at it being paid is because obviously they want to bill the client for that holiday time being built up. So whoever the worker is actually doing their work for. But in terms of rolled up holiday pay, now correct me if I'm wrong, because you'll have looked at it more recently than I will have. My understanding is that basically you receive the payment for your holiday at the same time as your normal pay, whereas an accrued holiday is kind of that 12.07% that is filtered away in a separate pot, I guess. So is that a reasonable explanation?
Yes, absolutely. So, I mean, rolled up is when your umbrella company will pay you your holiday pay there and then. So every pay period, you know, whatever amount of holiday that you've accrued, it will be paid to you with your paycheck at the end of the week or whatever. And it means you have that money in your pocket. You're basically receiving more than you otherwise would have done. But what it also means is that when you want to take your holiday in a week's time or a month's time or however long it is, you're not going to have that holiday paid out again. You know, you're only going to get your holiday pay once. And often, you know, workers perhaps don't realise that the extra money in their paycheck is intended to cover them for those periods when they're not working. So I suppose that's where, you know, there is some kind of confusion and misunderstanding. Accrued, you know, the umbrella company does the job for you. They kind of take it and put it aside a bit like, you know, kind of very paternalistically and look after it so that you don't spend it. And then they pay out to when you need it, which is when you're on holiday.
Yeah, and it's about being clear. I don't know if umbrellas will always offer a choice of both. It might be that one is how that umbrella is set up to work administratively more so than another. But the point is, I don't think there's anything wrong with either, so long as you're clear which it is. And if you do have a choice, to choose whichever one is going to suit you. And I suppose with rolled up, at least you've got the money. Whereas I guess with accrued holiday pay, it's possible that you don't remember to kind of ask for it or whatever. It's a difficult one. And again, this is where key information documents, I would argue, should be clarifying that. Time will tell. And I think key information documents have huge amounts of potential to do more. So in terms of benefits of umbrellas versus agencies. So all the stuff we've talked about so far in relation to kind of pay rates and that side of things and holiday, those issues are applicable to agency workers whether or not they are paid through an umbrella or whether they're on agency payroll. And just on the payroll side of things, the overheads that umbrellas have, agencies would have those as well. So it's just that they're kind of wrapped up elsewhere financially. So anyway, benefits of umbrellas as opposed to agencies, are there any? What were your findings?
I think what we found was that umbrella companies kind of like to major on the fact that they give all these employment rights to agency workers and so on. But I think once we kind of got to the bottom of it, we kind of worked out that mostly agency workers would have those kind of core employment rights and protections on agency payroll anyway.
Yeah, as a worker.
We thought that there were probably some benefits in terms of like the smoothing mechanism that umbrella employment can offer agency workers. Things like auto enrollment, you know, if you were an agency worker, because agencies have the ability to postpone auto enrolling you for 3 months, if you kind of were one of these agency workers that moved around quite a lot from assignment to assignment, it's feasible that you could work for a whole long period doing lots of different assignments and never manage to get auto enrolled in any of them because you never met the 3 month period. When you're working, you know, if everything is funneled through an umbrella company and you manage to keep hold of that umbrella company to join up one period of agency working to the next, in that situation it's more likely that you would be auto-enrolled because there's only one period of postponement at the very beginning, and after that you have to be put into the system. So we thought that there were probably some potential kind of smoothing mechanisms, but we weren't able to get our hands on any kind of like clear data. I think that if we'd have had more time, you know, it might have been an interesting exercise to kind of look ask umbrella companies if they would be willing to share with us some payroll data around how many workers they kind of put into auto enrollment in a particular year, or and kind of compared that to what the situation might have been if they'd have been outside. But as I said, we didn't really have the time to kind of get into that.
No, and that's quite a detailed kind of analysis I would expect. So the kind of smoothing aspect of umbrellas also enables workers to have several different agencies and keep the same umbrella. And I think the other point is potentially around access to finance. So whether it's kind of mortgages or, you know, that continuity of employer can be quite useful in that kind of sphere, I think.
I would agree. And it also means that agency workers, I mean, we often come across agency workers that are having kind of emergency tax deducted. And that's because, you know, they're either on multiple assignments or they're signed up to multiple agencies all at the same time, and only the first agency is treated as their main employment, which means that every subsequent agency is treated as a second employment. And it means it's taxed automatically at basic rate. And that, you know, it's a bit of a cash flow issue because, you know, these workers will have basic rate tax deducted at source. And, you know, it will all come out in the wash at the end of the year.
It will even out,
when the P800 happens. But it can be a bit of a cash flow issue. So the umbrella company kind of channeling all those payments and acting as the kind of conduit for all of those different agencies means that there shouldn't be that basic rate emergency tax problem. So.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. And so if you are an agency worker in a sector where you might be doing lots of different things in any given week for lots of different agencies, then I think can really see there would be a benefit there. I mean, I don't know, you could be a supply teacher in five different schools in a week with five different agencies, or a nurse in five different hospitals with five different agencies, or what, you know, that I could well see it working out for that type of worker. In terms of kind of umbrella contracts, did you manage to look at many in your research? And, you know, I think that they're often based on minimum wage and a flexible portion of paid. Was that your finding, and what were your thoughts around it?
Yeah, it's interesting, the whole minimum wage bonus thing. That does certainly seem to be kind of prevalent really within the industry, that kind of mechanism, that structure. And I just think it's really interesting because I suppose that what we all have to remember is that when an umbrella company takes on an agency worker, it takes it on as its own employee. And that means that the umbrella company has all these obligations and responsibilities towards this agency worker. And that includes paying them. I mean, you know, that's their main function really, is to pay the agency worker. But in order for the agency worker to be paid, actually a lot of things have to happen, don't they? That the end client needs to pay the agency. The agency then needs to pay the umbrella company. The umbrella company then has the money that it needs to pay the worker. If any of those things go wrong, the umbrella company has no money to pay the worker. And I think it kind of leaves umbrella companies in quite a kind of precarious position, where their ability to do their job as an employer actually is reliant on kind of external forces that are outside their control. So my understanding is that this kind of structure where workers are promised the national minimum wage for every hour they worked, and then everything else on top of that is rolled up and paid as a kind of discretionary bonus, is put into place to protect the umbrella company in the rare situation where it doesn't receive the money that it needs to from the other people in the supply chain.
Yeah, I mean, you're quite right. And I think the other thing from the umbrella perspective about having that structure is it enables them to vary pay. So, and you're probably going to go on to that. And it just, if you're a supply teacher at a school on one day on a certain rate, you might be on a different rate the next day. And so theoretically, if your contract with the umbrella said you're always going to be earning X amount, every single time you change assignments, you would have to have a variation to your contract. And that would be incredibly onerous for the umbrella and for you, the worker, receiving all these contractual amends, whereas you probably just want to do your job and get paid. So there's that aspect to it as well. Hi, unfortunately, we need to just pause our interview there because Meredith and I ended up chatting for quite a bit longer. So I've decided to split our chat into two episodes. So you will be able to pick up the rest of this when it's issued next week. But for now, please feel free to download the report that we've been discussing. There's loads more that we want to share with you about the umbrella industry, about issues with umbrella. We also talk about the construction sector specifically, and we also talk about things that the sector might want to do going forward. So loads of good content to come. So please make sure you tune in next week to pick up the rest of our chat, and I'll hopefully talk to you then. Bye for now.
Thank you for listening to Empowering Agency Workers, hosted by Julia Kermode. For more information on today's discussion, please visit iwork.co.uk, where you can also join our growing community. We hope you enjoyed today's episode, and if you did, then we would love you to subscribe, rate and review our podcast. We'll be back at the same time next week.